All right, hi everyone. Just trying to get my camera in a way where you can see my full head. Okay, so today is the first grave precept. Oh, and for those who don't know me, I'm Coral. I took the precepts in 2019. So it's been a minute, just a minute though, like a second. And so this is the first day of the grave precepts. And personally, I think all you really need are the three pure precepts that Mick went over 2 weeks ago. But the grave precepts kind of give us a little more detail on what to look for and what to practice. I don't know who is Zoom host today. Is that Mick? I'm going to do two breakout rooms today. And I was thinking like three or four people for 10 minutes. Okay, cool. It's just this precept is so straightforward that I think it would be sweet to talk about it a little bit. I couldn't think of a whole lot to say. So the first grave precept is do not kill, cultivate and encourage life. And I split this precept into two interpretations. The one being the really literal interpretation of do not kill sentient beings. And then the second interpretation is more subtle. And it's a matter of, are you killing someone's spirit? Are you being violent with your words or communication? And how is your inner dialogue when you talk to yourself? So specifically, I'm going to talk about violent communication. So getting into the more literal interpretation. For those who have deeply examined this precept, you may have realized that it's impossible to follow. In this Diane Rosetto book that Domio recommended, she says, she quotes one of her students' interpretations, and I really like this. And it's, I resolve to look squarely with an open heart at the rage, fear, and sense of separateness that feed my impulses to harm others, remembering that my life on earth must cause the death and suffering of many fellow creatures. I resolve with gratitude to abstain from cruelty and relieve the suffering that I can. So this precept becomes a deeply personal balancing act, recognizing that our existence causes harm and death to fellow creatures. How do we minimize that harm? And so that's the essence of this precept to me. The first thing, and this is kind of an aside, and I struggled to figure out where to put this in the talk, so I thought I would just come out with it at the beginning. So when viewing the universe as this boundarylessness place where the self doesn't exist and the world is empty infinity, death does not exist. In the Mind of Clover book, which is also a really good precept book, there is a quote that says, "There is no one killing, no killing, and no one to be killed." And my engineering brain interprets this as one of the Newtonian laws of physics, which is energy cannot be destroyed, only transferred. So the Mind of Clover book goes on to say, but if there is no sword, no swing of the sword, no decapitation, what about all the blood? What about the wails of the widow and children? So obviously there is suffering as a result of killing. So this view of no killing is kind of, in my eyes, dangerous. However, before I move on from this point, I'd like to recognize that if you need to eat meat for your health, or you just don't have the capacity to make large changes in your lifestyle right now, this is my interpretation is this is the natural way of things, according to our boundarylessness view of the universe. The energy that this plant has that's growing is transferred to you when you eat it. When you eat an animal, that animal has energy, and now it's your energy. That energy doesn't die. It's within you now, and you get to choose what to do with that energy. And that's a little woo-woo, but that's how that's something I take a heart in, because it's not possible for everyone to become vegan and vegetarian. And I'm using this example of eating animals because it's low-hanging fruit. We talk about it a lot, and we're comfortable talking about this, right? But there's people who have to make decisions about abortion and euthanasia, and they have to grapple with this on a personal level and decide how they feel about that. Leaning back into this boundarylessness idea, I think we can get trapped in relativity if we lean on this idea too much, that because there's no killing, I don't have to worry about it. It doesn't matter. But that's why this precept exists, because it does matter. Okay? So straight off the bat, I want to go into breakout rooms, and I want everybody to discuss the principle of do not kill and whether or not it can be taken too far. At what point does it become impractical or unrealistic? And where should we draw the line? Okay. So
how long do you think, Coral?
10 minutes, I think, is okay.
So are we in breakout
rooms? Oh, yeah. Does anybody have anything they want to share? Well, that's okay.
Well, I thought Nick had a really good point about that taking not killing too far, that actually really rabid anti-abortion stuff is in that, an example of that.
Right.
Just so extreme, just do not kill, and yet then you just, regardless of any other consequences.
Right. If you couldn't hear that, Nick brought up the idea the concept that these really radical anti-abortionists are an example of taking do not kill way too far without considering the consequences of that. And it's actually brought up in our group as well, and is discussed in The Mind of Clover, which I think this book was written in the 60s.
Yeah.
When I think it was, unfortunately it's a hot topic now too. There are consequences to that, on a personal level for this woman that might be going through life risk, endangerment, or, ruining the rest of her life potentially, and even on like a societal and community scale of poverty and continuing that on. Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
On the same subject too, we touched on the medical causes oftentimes why abortions would be needed. And an example we used was ectopic pregnancies that can be deadly to the woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sometimes, there's not an option. And it can do a lot of harm.
And that's like a stalemate. It's okay, well, I can't kill this baby yet. Like, you're killing me now.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do here?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Can people in the cloud?
Can you hear what's happening in here?
I can move a chair up.
Great.
Yeah,
we got some thumbs up.
I may as well go. So I just want to interject, and I think that this abortion thing got off on a weird foot, because it's also an example of people drawing lines where it suits them. Because
mm-hmm.
I think if you took a survey of all the pro-life, I'm so into life people, they're all pro-capital punishment. And so is this really about life, or is it about control?
Right.
Right? So we draw our lines, and we have to examine where and how and why, but maybe it's not so simple as life.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's a really good point.
Thank you very much.
Mick?
Yeah, I think the kind of easy example of taking it too far is this notion of an animal that's gravely wounded or something, right? And there's this like notion of like enacting compassion through killing. I mean, and it is possible to kill a living being out of compassion. And, you know, with all the precepts, compassion is the trump card. And so there's this really, really tricky dynamic, even in this one, right? The easiest of the precepts of like, you know, on one hand, it's like a literal rule that's meant to be followed, like don't do it. But on the other hand, like it's not necessarily so straightforward. Like, and I think, you know, kind of one of the things that I had mentioned in the group is that like, it's almost like the precepts are ways of recognizing how we separate ourselves from other living beings. And there's sort of these like catch points where I'll smush that bug because it's gross, because it's not me, it's something else. And like in these moments when we kind of like almost mindlessly kill things, are these moments where we separate ourselves from all the other living beings that are out there. And I you know, it's a mess because like at some point, yeah, just don't kill stuff. But on another level, it's like you recognize that you're connected inextricably with all other living things out there. I don't know.
Thank you. Leah?
Yeah, our group talked. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, our group talked about ants. Killing ants, they come in the house, and then we got right to spicy, like survival. Like if you're starving and you need to survive, am I shooting invasive squirrels in my yard? Theoretically, sure. Like, okay. So we were thinking about our relationship to like bugs and then animals and then you know, what would you do in defense of your own child if someone were coming to attack you? You know, I don't know. Would you this? We're just asking a lot of questions about, well, where are the edges of this precept? A lot of edgy, you know, Mad Max apocalypse scenario topics in our group. So.
Absolutely, I think self-defense is a big one here. Nonviolent action in that way is hard. All right, I'm gonna keep going. So how do we do the best we can with this precept? Diane Rossetto says that this precept puts us in the driver's seat when we recognize it is impossible to never kill, and yet we must take the path of not harming. How are we to solve this riddle? And to me, I think it's the encouraging life part of this precept. And so, at the beginning of my talk, I want to talk about the two interpretations of this precept. The first being not killing sentient beings. And so now I'd like to focus on the more subtle interpretation, something that's a little easier to practice every day. And that's using nonviolent communication. Are you killing with your words or with the way that you're speaking to yourself? And by participating in violent communication, you are not cultivating life. You're killing people's spirits, hopes, dreams, creative ideas, relationships, killing the vibe. And typical examples of violent speech include insulting, putting people down, labeling, criticizing, diagnosing, seeing someone as wrong. Essentially, you're pushing someone into the same delusion and separateness that we're trying to resolve in that Diane Rossetto quote that I recited earlier, the one that was, I resolve to look squarely with an open heart at the rage, fear, and sense of separateness that feed my impulses to harm others. So basically, we're just encouraging other people to do that by using violent speech. And this happens in snap reactions. It tends to happen when we're acting out in anger, fear, or pain. And unfortunately, we react like this to people who we love the most because we're comfortable showing our emotions to them. And then I do want to touch on harmful inner dialogue, which includes things like, I'm not enough, no one values me, or I'm incapable. So what does nonviolent communication look like? Fortunately, this is like everywhere in Western psychology. If you've ever looked at I just Googled examples of nonviolent communication, and on positivepsychology.com, I found this guide. It was very Buddhist centric, even though they didn't mention Buddhism at all. And so I have some examples. The first one being using observations without judgment. This means presenting the simple facts that we observed. So instead of saying, you don't listen to me when I'm speaking, you could say, in our meeting today, I noticed you were on your phone. Holding back judgments when addressing an issue prevents the triggering of defenses and opens up the possibility for an exchange that leads to understanding. So that's the first example I found. And then the second example I liked, and obviously there's infinite examples, but I liked this one a lot. Taking responsibility for our feelings and realizing that what others say and do is the stimulus for our feelings, but never the cause for our feelings. And this website uses the example of someone telling you, you're so selfish. So imagine you're getting this criticism, you're so selfish. You could take it really personally and let it crush you and be like, I am really selfish. You could fight back and say, I'm not selfish, you are. But what the third example that they have, which is what you should do, is consider both your own needs and the needs of the person giving you this critical feedback. Some of examples of this would look like, when I hear you say that I am selfish, I feel hurt because I need some recognition of the effort I make to consider your preferences. Or, are you feeling hurt because you need more consideration for your preferences? I mean, this is like the I statement things. I mean, everybody has probably heard of this, but I love the idea of that. And I think we talked about this a little bit in the Beginner's Mind book, that what other people in day do and say stimulates our feelings, but they're not causing us to act out. And we can change the way that we speak to protect ourselves. And by choosing nonviolent communication, we're more likely to understand the person you're having this conversation with, meet your own needs, and protect yourself from harmful inner dialogue or even external violence. So, but in the moment, you receive this kind of feedback that makes you feel uncomfortable or makes you snap, emotions are charged. How do we achieve nonviolent communication? And Mick mentioned this in his talk on the peer precepts, and I was like, darn it. But I'm going to talk it about again because I already wrote the precepts. And that's this pause, this concept of the pause. And Diane Rosetto again says that the way to follow this precept is an unrelenting determination to be awake and present in the full scope of our reactions. And it's hard to do, but in Radical Acceptance, the book by Tara Brach, she's also a clinical psychologist, she dedicates a whole chapter to the sacred pause. And Mick had mentioned how hard this is, really hard. But it can be applied to just about any scenario. And this sacred pause, it's a little bit of a tangent, but I just want to talk about it because it's a tool you can use to practice this precept. And so in the scenario of violent communication, the sacred pause is letting go of what we're about to say in order to genuinely listen and be with the other person. When we're in this place where we are anxious to protect ourselves, it's very easy to kill another person's view. And I'm not saying you have to support views that you think are dangerous or harmful, but simply shutting them down or nipping the conversation in the bud isn't a great solution. And even deeply held convictions can melt in a dialogue that is held in trust. So this is a quote from the Radical Acceptance book. In the midst of a pause, we are giving room and attention to life that is always streaming through us, the life that is habitually overlooked. It is in this rest under the Bodhi tree that we realize the natural freedom of our heart and awareness. Like the Buddha, rather than running away, We need only commit ourselves to arriving here and now with wholehearted presence. And I think this lends perfectly to the encouraging life part of this precept. There's so much life that goes unnoticed in our very fast-paced, production-centric world. If we pause more often, I think we'd see more life. And we would see life that could use some extra encouragement as well. And I realized as I was practicing my precept today that I don't really have an example of what a sacred pause, I didn't write an example of what a sacred pause looks like in conversation. And I'm trying to think of times that I've done it other than saying, you know, being really heated in a discussion, being like, I need to pause and stepping away for a few moments. But I do have this example that happened to me at work one time where I was talking with, I work for a municipality and I was talking with a community member and they said something pretty nasty to me. And instead of responding, I didn't know what to say. So I just sat there and I took a deep breath. And just like that moment of silence, they immediately backpedaled. It was just like they wanted to fight with me, and I just didn't do it, and it was really successful. And I, it worked really well. Let's see what the time. All right, I'm going to keep going. So to wrap it up, this is my last little topic. I want to talk about taking action. And I'm going to read a little excerpt again. Sorry, there's a lot of this in this one. From the Diane Rossetto book. And this is a student talking about this precept again. And it says, working with this precept worded as an aspiration, I find the onus or responsibility more on myself to take action, even with situations that I'm not directly involved in. For example, even though I myself may not be directly contributing, say, the execution of someone on death row, I am not supporting life unless I become proactive in some way. Doing nothing or taking the position that doesn't concern me because I don't make the laws doesn't cut it. This precept, worded this way, places the choice of appropriate action in my hands. And so, when you see groups of marginalized people experience violence and killing, or witnessing the degradation of the environment, to take action on this is to follow this precept. And to tie it all together, I'm going to talk about Martin Luther King Jr.'s 6 key principles of nonviolent action. So I think these are beautiful. I took a nonviolent communication class in college, and these 6 principles, are inspired by his faith. So they have words like evil in it, but they're also really inspired by Gandhi. He was deeply inspired by Gandhi, and he even traveled to India to learn about Gandhi's concept of nonviolence. So here we go. The first one is, one can resist evil without resorting to violence. Second, nonviolence seeks to win the friendship and understanding of the opponent, not to humiliate them. Third, evil itself, not the people committing evil acts, should be opposed. Fourth, those committed to nonviolence must be willing to suffer without retaliation, as suffering itself can be redemptive. Fifth, nonviolent resistance avoids external physical violence and internal violence of spirit as well. The nonviolent resistor not only refuses to shoot their opponent, but they also refuse to hate them. The resistor should be motivated by love in the sense of the Greek word agape, which means understanding or redeeming goodwill for all people. The sixth principle is that the nonviolent resistor must have a deep faith in the future, stemming from the conviction that the universe is on the side of justice. Just gives me goosebumps. I love it so much. And I just love how we could just take a Buddhist view on this. We could put this in a Buddhist book and it would be, right? I just think it's great.
Coral, yes. Could you read the last one again, please?
The sixth principle is that the nonviolent resistor must have a deep faith in the future, stemming from the conviction that the universe is on the side of justice. And that leads us to our second discussion question. And I think we can do 10 minutes again. What do you currently do to cultivate and encourage life? And if you can't think of anything, maybe brainstorm with your group. I'm excited to hear. I'm looking forward to hearing what people have to share. We have a little bit of time.
I'll just pull my chair.
Yeah, sorry, I took the microphone chair.
That's good. Talk here?
Yeah.
In our group, we mentioned a couple of things. One of which was gardening, because a lot of us do gardening and taking care of plants and taking care of beloved pets. But I wanted to go back to the pause. I don't think this can be spoken of enough. And I think there's a reason to use that pause. I haven't thought about this too hard, but possibly in every single one of the precepts. It'll come up again in anger. Mm-hmm. Judging others. Yes, coming up. And the question was, what does it look like? I don't recall Tara Brach talking about the sacred pause. I kind of get why she's calling it that. But to me, it's silent. And the silence is what's so important. And even if you want to get the person, that silence, I should probably not say this, but it's too late. I've already said it. That silence gives that person a chance to hear himself. But more importantly, the real reason behind it is it gives me a chance to take a breath and figure out where to go next. And perhaps I don't go anywhere. I just sit and be ready for the next moment. I quote a famous yoga teacher often who said, between the inhale and the exhale, there are a million possibilities. And I love that. So I'll just leave that.
Thank you. Yeah. So people can hear you on Zoom.
Yeah. Our group talked a little bit about how you can get kind of like caught up in an exhaust loop trying to cultivate life around you, and where do you kind of find that energy? And it's really like you find it from putting in the effort to cultivate life around you. That's what's going to energize you instead of exhausting you. And it's hard to kind of like cross that barrier where like that moment where you're like, I don't want to do this, but now I'm going to do this because of the payoff later. But yeah, it's easier than most people think to get kind of caught in that I'm not going to cultivate anything around me because I couldn't even find the energy within myself right now. And pushing through that is what's going to give you the energy to continue doing it. So, yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, I can totally see that. I think a lot of people are facing burnout right now in a lot of different ways. Just culturally. We did like a survey at the city of Hillsboro, 1300 people work there. I think like 80% of the people or more said they're experiencing burnout, but not just like work, but like just being with other people. It's just 40 hours a week is a lot. And then going home and cultivating life in your house, which is, can be challenging as well. So yeah, thanks. My view on this computer has changed. So is there anybody with their hand up? No. Oh, it just went back. For a minute there, it was just my face. Mick?
Oh, I was just going to tell you that I messed that up. I quit.
Oh, okay. No worries. Well, it's 9 o'clock now, so I think I'll call it. We offer the merit of the scripture recitation to all so that they all be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
iPhone has a question.
iPhone?
It was a broad question to everyone.
Oh, a chat?
About one of the books.
Oh.